in the book. So we're going to turn to Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, and just read 26 and 27, and then Genesis chapter 2, starting at verse 18. Then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God said, the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." Now the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the wild animals and all the birds in the sky. He brought them to the man to see what he would name them. And whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. So the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds in the sky, and all the wild animals. But for Adam, no suitable helper was found. So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and then closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." Quite a few years ago now, Simon and I went on a holiday in the Austrian Alps in the mountains. We used to travel quite a lot to the mountains in the summer, and we'd been to Switzerland and we went to Austria. As you can imagine, with our holidays, the weather was terrible. And for most of the time, we saw mist, and we were camping, mist and rain and cold. We were told, once again, that this was very unusual for that time of the year. At which point I was beginning to think it was actually very usual whenever we visited. But when the mist and the rain cleared, the view of the mountains was spectacular. Probably due to the fact that they'd been covered for most of the time. So when you finally saw, it was amazing. And the height and the range and just the hugeness of it all was just breathtaking. We were with a couple of friends, and we, when the days were good, which was few, would travel around looking at different ranges of mountains. And while we were looking around and we were looking at the amazing views, they would frequently point out things on the mountains. "Oh, look at that. Look, you can see the sheep up there." Now, I can't really see at a distance, so if you're sitting fairly far back, you could fall asleep. I'd never know, because I need glasses. And so every time they're pointing out these wonderful things, I was like, I can't see. I can see maybe some white stuff. Is that the sheep? And they're like, "No, Kate, no, that's a big rock. Over there a little bit." And I ended up at the end of every conversation, "Kate, put your glasses on. Then you'll be able to see." Now, eventually, when I decided I'd actually take my glasses with me and I put them on, I saw not only amazing views from a distance, but the detail of what was up in the mountains, which was even better. And you know, here in Genesis chapter 1, we have this wonderful view of the creation of the world. Starting with day 1 and finishing with day 7, we have a whole panorama of creative activity. A long-range picture, if you like, of the creative hand of the God of the universe, which finishes by the wonderful creation of human beings. Beings that are set apart from all other created items because they are beings who are made in the very image of God. So God created human beings in his own image, in the image of God. He created the male and female. He created them. Taken as a whole, this first chapter of the book of Genesis, the very beginning of the Bible, is a wonderful view of the creation of the world and the creation of us. It's a little bit like looking at the mountains from afar and looking with amazement at the array, at the size, at the beauty of what is going on. There's not a lot of detail in Genesis chapter 1 because there's not supposed to be, it's not designed for that. But there's an awful lot of wonder and admiration, finishing off with the words, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array." And then we turn to Genesis chapter 2. And quite bizarrely, when we get to verse 4, we seem to begin all over again with another description of creation. This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created, when the Lord God made the earth and the heavens. The beginning of another passage, which gives a very short account of the creation of the world and a long, detailed account of human beings. And we're tempted to think, when we read these two one after another, that the Bible is repeating itself at best and contradicting itself at worst. Two chapters on exactly the same thing. Until we realise that actually Genesis chapter 2 is taking a different view. Or if you like, Genesis chapter 2 is saying to us, now you've looked at the vast array, put on your glasses and take a closer look at the detail, the things that you can't see from a long way away. And so we're led into this detailed description, not of the creation of the world, but of human beings, the creation of us, or at least the significance behind the creation of human beings. Which begins, of course, with one human being, Adam, which literally means human in this passage, and finishes with two people, Adam and Eve. And the account starts, as we've read, as God creates Adam by moulding the dust of the ground and breathing life into him. And then after placing this first human in the Garden of Eden to tend and care and look after it, God makes the announcement that it's not good for the man, for the human, to be alone. So he decides to make a helper, or if you like, a companion, someone who can rule and have dominion alongside this first human. Which results in many other different types of animals being created. Animals of varying shapes and sizes, which are all brought to Adam to see what names he will give to them. Which ends up in a slightly comical verse in the Bible, with Adam naming creatures. And you can kind of imagine, you know, Adam kicking back with a bottle or a cup of tea, and God parading the animals in front of him. And Adam's like, "Oh, well, I think that one's a pelican. And that one is for definite got to be a parakeet." I mean, how did it work? Maybe he looked at it and went, "Well, that's for definite a turkey, because that is just too ugly to be anything else. And that one is got to be a yak." I mean, it's part of the creation story, which is comical and particularly far-fetched. Adam naming the animals. But actually, it's quite an important part of the creation story, because here in the naming of the animals, Adam is given a task which is normally only reserved for God, or later on for kings and for royalty. And that's the task of naming things. It's the task of being given authority. Because in ancient times, the time that the book of Genesis was written, it was believed that when you named something, you then had authority over that creature or that thing. So this first human being, Adam, is taking authority that God has given him, has his representative on the earth, his image and likeness. He's living out the role that God has created him to do. But despite this wonderful task and this empowering of the first human being by God, no suitable helper was found. So God created again, this time not out of the earth, but out of the human, out of Adam, taking a rib and creating a woman, the character that we now know as Eve. And when Eve is brought to Adam, he sees that this is the perfect match. And so man and woman are created. Now, the interesting thing about this passage is that over the years in our culture and society, it has been dramatically transformed. From an account of creation, a close-up view of the reasons why God created man and woman, into either a love story, where man meets woman, man falls in love with woman, and man marries woman, or the basis for an argument, male versus female, who is ultimately supposed to be in authority. However, it won't surprise you to hear that when this book was written, neither of these were on the agenda. Love story wasn't on the agenda, and an argument wasn't on the agenda. Because when God created Adam and decided that it was not good for him to be alone, he didn't do this because it was a romantic gesture by God. Man needs woman, woman needs man, so I will create again. It was more a practical solution. You know, he was a human being living in this wonderful environment, an environment teeming with life and creation and hard work. And to be perfectly honest, the human couldn't cope. There was so much to do, so much to look after, so much to have dominion and authority over, that it couldn't cope on its own. And so God saw the need for a companion, for a partner, for a strong person who was able to carry the load. It's the practical solution of a human not being able to cope with what's given. Of course, man and woman were blessed by God and subsequently told to be fruitful and increase in number. But initially, Adam's need for a helper was a practical one. He didn't want a wife necessarily. He wanted a workmate, someone to help with all that had to be done. But why create this workmate in the way that God did? I mean, why the removal of a rib? Why the operation? Surely a God of creation who had created out of the dirt of the ground such wonders could create again another human out of the dust of the ground and breathe life into this human. Why this weird and wonderful method of creation, which, to be quite honest, has had all sorts of interpretations about the balance of authority between men and women over the years? Well, it seems that when we put our glasses on and we take a closer look at creation, the creation of human beings in the book of Genesis has a lot more to say to us than we might first assume. Because instead of modelling a second human out of the dust of the ground, model number two, who could work alongside model number one, God takes the first human, who, according to the language used in this passage, was not of any specific gender at this point, just a human, and God makes two humans. So he takes a human made in his image and likeness, Adam, and from this one human, God makes two. Therefore, in that moment, creating male and female. Two people who have the same genetic makeup, if you like, but are different in gender. So that now, instead of one being carrying the image of God on earth, together these two beings carry the image of God on earth. And therefore, not are they only a perfect match for each other, to support each other and have dominion and rule together, but together they now hold all that the one being held on its own. And not only that, not only are they made at the same time, out of the same stuff, to carry the image of God together, they are also given the same authority. Earlier in the passage, Adam, when he was alone, was given authority over all the other animals because he named them. However, when Adam and Eve are created, things are slightly different, because although God brings Eve to Adam, a bit like he did all the other animals, he doesn't ask him to name her. He doesn't give Adam the authority to name Eve. Instead, God brings Eve to Adam to see if this is the right partner. And instead of naming, Adam exclaims, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man." It reminds me a little bit, I don't know whether any of you watched the royal wedding. Oh, some did. Good. Well, it was all very exciting, wasn't it? But one bit that the commentators on telly got particularly excited about was when Kate and William came out onto the balcony, because they were quite thrilled that this once lowly woman of high class standing, but very lowly in comparison to royalty, was actually there with all the royal family. And when the doors opened, they got very excited that she responded like a real human as opposed to royalty. And she went, "Oh, wow," when she saw all the crowds. And the commentators were like, "Oh, she's just said, oh, wow." And you're like, "Yes, I know." Because it's as if she couldn't believe that her of such lowly standing married into royalty, and all these people had come to join in the celebration. And her first words were an exclamation of, "Oh, wow, look at this. Look at what's happening." And it's the same sense we get here. When Eve is brought to Adam, it's like he says, "Oh, wow, yes, this is woman, because she has come out of man." It's an exclamation of the right thing has just appeared and happened. After the fall, of course, in Genesis chapter 3, things are very different, and we are told Adam named his wife Eve because she would become the mother of all the living. But here at the beginning of creation, in the Garden of Eden, the picture that is painted is one of equality. Man and woman, created by God at the same time, out of the same material, to be equal partners who together and only together make up the image of God on earth. And God saw that it was good. Now, there's no doubt that this is a great picture and a great story, but it's also a picture which begs the question, if this is how God intended life to be, between man and woman at the start of creation, is this not how we should be today as well? Of course, I'm not referring to living in a garden, tame animals all around, vegetarian dominance, and a little bit of nakedness. I'm not referring to that at all. That would be ridiculous. But what I'm saying is, if God created male and female as equal partners, who only together make up his image, shouldn't this impact how we as male and female live today? I mean, sure, there's the argument that we live in a fallen world, a world where values and relationships are very different to how they were at the beginning of creation. But as the people of God, there's also the realization that within this fallen world, we now live under the rule of God and the reign of Jesus Christ, where there is neither Jew or Gentile, neither slave nor free, neither male nor female, for you are all one in Jesus Christ. So surely, fallen world or not, if created equal and confirmed as equal, surely we should live as equal partners today as well. Now, you might think that what I'm saying need not be said. After all, we're living in 2012, and equality has long been high on the agenda of our culture. But even so, there is a sense in which the values we hold about each other, male and female, are not always the values of Genesis chapter 2. And sometimes, you know, this might not even be very obvious to us. We might simply live as we have always lived, but inside, the values that we hold about each other don't necessarily match up to the values of God. Maybe, you know, inside we feel superior because we think we are. Or maybe inside we feel inferior because that's how we've seen we should be. Or maybe as a certain gender we feel we need to fight our corner to get to a level ground. We've got to fight to be there. Or maybe we feel we need to defend what we have always had and there's no way it's going to change. Maybe it's just that we find it funny, I don't know, to make sexist jokes because sometimes they are very funny. Or maybe we find it funny to join in the general put-downs of another gender that we hear round about. Or we like to point out gender failings because there are specific failings sometimes of a specific gender. Or maybe we just pass negative comments on the appearance or the actions of the opposite sex because that's what people do. And you know, these things are not very serious, it's just a laugh. But as we have seen, this is not how God created us. And it can't be the way that we develop a strong partnership that God wanted us to have. Because instead, we can end up feeling we're in a battle to get to the right place with each other. And we can end up treating men or women as opposition in a tactical game of life. Now, maybe we think what I'm saying is unimportant or blown out of proportion, or maybe we think it doesn't apply to us. But you know, how we treat our husband or wife, our partner, our friends, our colleagues, our family, how we treat those people of the opposite sex is of utmost importance. Because at the pinnacle of all God chose to make, the pinnacle of creation, stands men and women, male and female, equal partners in the care and development of our world. And until we take that seriously as the people of God, until we start to live in a way that reflects our roots, until we value each other as God values us, we will bury the uniqueness of our creation. That together, and only together, do we truly represent the image of God here on our earth.